On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, I am joined by Lance Brozdowski of the Marquee Network to talk about all the baseball from the weekend. Four sweeps, the Brewers, the Phillies, the Mariners, and the D-backs taking all three over the weekend. Highlight a few other series. Talk about some pitchers, because Lance knows pitching as well as anyone. And so much more on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world subsisting on the power of friendship. I'm Jordan Schusterman, joined not by Jake Mintz, who is on vacation. It's his turn to skip a podcast. Instead, it is the highly anticipated, even if you didn't know you were anticipating it, the highly anticipated Barbacast debut of my dear friend Lance Brozdowski. Lance, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for filling in for Jake.
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, this is going to be fun. I listen to you guys a lot. Very excited to talk some ball. I feel like I'm maybe the sixth or seventh inning guy in the bullpen here. So I got to step up, you know? I don't know. My ERA hasn't been that good over the last year. So I actually don't have. This is the debut, actually. So we'll say in AAA, I've been like a... I've been PCL. Give me a PCL, like 4-1 ERA. It's Dude, really good, right?
Are you kidding? Yeah. Oh, my God. 4-1 in the PCL. You might be a top prospect there. I mean, my goodness. I could think of some really good pitchers that would love to have a 4-1 in the PCL. Lance, thank you so much for joining me. Before we have a lot of baseball to get to. We got a bunch of sweeps. Lance, who does work for Marquee, I love your title, player development analyst. I believe is what you are, among many things. Lance has become a must read, a must watch for me. His Substack, his YouTube channel is absolute, just fantastic content for people who just want to super duper dork out, but also you don't. Like, Lance is a friendly face. You're not going to be too overwhelmed when Lance is throwing some pitch metrics at you. I think you do a great job of kind of distilling that info for us. But before we get started, yeah, I mean, what is the rough day-to-day? What are the kind of stuff that you work on? And then just establish those credentials so that for the rest of this episode, people aren't just like, who is this guy? Why did they get him on here?
That's a great point. Yeah, so I work for the Cubs RSN, so Marquee Sports Network. I'm a player development analyst, as you said. Very fancy title. That just means I'm like on air, and I also do a lot of production work. So I have like a nerd segment a couple times a week. So if you're local in the market, or even if you're on the MLB TV, I think you could pop on and watch our pregame. You'll see me on there occasionally. And I help on the production side. So like I work with a lot of our talent. You know, Cliff Floyd's in a lot. I cut his breakdown tape, so to speak. So the video editing experience. And then usually, I mean, honestly, my strength's more on the national side. It's just I happen to have a job that's local. So most of the time I'm like looking at big picture stuff in baseball. I really enjoy like macro trends in a lot of the minor leagues. And I cover those through my Substack and YouTube. So I'd say that's my day-to-day. Usually just crushing ball, crushing box scores, writing up notes. It's great.
And that is why you are very qualified to do this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast with me. I wanted to get someone new, someone that hasn't been on before, someone that can talk about the whole league. And this is definitely going to have a little bit more of a pitching tilt. I know, not that you are incapable of analyzing hitters, let's be clear, but you do certainly specialize in those pitching trends, and I think do a great job. Now, I will say, sometimes when Lance writes, I'm like, man, this is, we're getting into the nitty gritty, and I'm like, I've listened to you kind of reflect on this on other podcasts about how some of these trends, it's like, does this matter, or am I just noticing something?
the imposter syndrome is real when you're looking at like four-seam usage to lefties and two strike counts over the last three starts, and you're like, is this a trend?
Right.
Like, but, probably not, but he's good. Look at this guy. He's good.
Right. I mean, I think you do a great job of balancing the is it a trend versus, you know, that humility of like, I don't know, but it's something interesting. And I think that is really what you do a good job of doing, is telling me why a pitcher is different. I mean, to me, it's that simple. That's something that we are constantly trying to do, even without numbers, is tell the stories of these players and explain what makes them unique. I mean, that's why baseball is so beautiful, because all these players got there in very, very different ways, and they're all succeeding in very, very different ways. And I think that Lance's ability to convey that will come across in this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Let's get into it, my friend. We have so much baseball to talk about. Did you know they just play every day on the weekend? They just keep playing baseball. Oh my gosh.
It's crazy.
This is I've told this story before, but I was at a game, you know, occasionally you got to go sit in the stands and just kind of get the vibe of the average baseball fan, or even someone that isn't necessarily, you know, going to a game often. And there's this group of teenagers that said, this was a couple months back, and this girl, she's kind of looking at the schedule and she'd be like, man, they play again tomorrow? And then they play again after. I'm like, yeah, no, they keep going, man. 162 is a lot of games. So anyway,
that's hilarious.
It is. It's good. We need that. We need that perspective every once in a while. But all right, let's get to it, Lance. Let's do it. Let's begin with our four sweeps. How sweep it is.
Clean up, everybody, everywhere.
There is no shame in getting swept. You guys got swept.
All right. Now, if you're a Cubs fan tuning into this episode, oh, I love seeing Lance on TV. He tells me all about Brandon Birdsall and his pitch mix. Oh,
that's a pull.
Ooh, bad news. Very tapped in Cubs fans. We're about to talk about the Milwaukee Brewers, who cannot stop winning. Oh my goodness, this team is unbelievable right now as they take all three over the struggling New York Mets over the weekend. We get a fantastic Brandon Woodruff start on Friday. I would love your opinion on this new version of Brandon Woodruff. We'll talk about him in a second. Blake Perkins throws out Starling Marte to end the game on Friday. Why Starling Marte didn't get pinch run for, I still don't totally understand. Brewers win that close one. On Saturday, Frankie Montas struggles again for the Mets. He gets an opener before him, but that doesn't really fix things. Well, William Contreras hits a home run after a pitch clock violation. That was a very weird sequence that the Mets were obviously not happy about. Another example of everything going right for the Brewers. Bryce Turang is heating up. Ryan Helsley struggles. Brewers win 7-4. And then on Sunday, it seems like, oh my gosh, the Brewers might finally lose. They're down 5-0 in the fourth inning. No, it doesn't matter. They come all the way back. We get a DL Hall dominant relief outing. Two more Contreras homers. Helsley struggles again. And then Isaac Collins, your NL Rookie of the Year, question mark? Maybe? He hits a walk-off homer off Edwin Diaz as the Brewers win 7-6. Before we get specific, Lance, this Brewers run has been remarkable. They have the best record in baseball. They have won 9 in a row. This was their 9th sweep of the season. Big picture, what are you taking away from this incredible Brewers season so far?
I think my angle is trying to figure out how sustainable this is. You know, like it's such an incredible run. I'm trying to contextualize the fact that they're basically top three in like every offensive and pitching stat, and their pen is great, and everything is like coming up Brewers, and I just struggle to see how they stay this hot. Like, if they stay this hot, they're winning the World Series is probably the answer. So you have to think about, okay, if they don't stay this hot, what do they come down to? And then does, like, the Dodgers all of a sudden looking like a force from a rotation standpoint with Snell back and Otani striking out everybody? Like, does that end up being, like, a coin flip series as you get into maybe, like, the NLCS or a divisional round or something? So, man, I it's tough to see this team cooling off. They have a massive 5 games in 4 days with the Cubs starting next Monday with a doubleheader. That is like going to shake out the NL Central. Mm-hmm. And I think that has massive implications on kind of how good, I guess, the Brewers are, which I think is very good.
Oh, totally. And I think it's so interesting because I'm almost getting to a point in a bizarro way that we used to feel about the Dodgers in the postseason where it's like, that's awesome. You're winning 105 games and you have all the best players, but like, we don't really care until you get to October. And in a weird way, the Brewers are almost in the same spot because we've seen them have these magical regular season runs before. Now, not like this, right? I mean, right now they're pacing for, you know, best team in franchise history. But if we also think about it that way, the only other time that they had the best record in baseball at the end of the regular season was 1982 when they went to the World Series. So this is obviously a franchise that is still trying to do that for the first time. I don't know what this looks like in October. You mentioned that they are ranking this highly in you know, offensive and in pitching, and yet some of the underlying stuff, as you mentioned, like, aren't they still like 30th in barrel rate or whatever?
Exactly.
Where you're just like, how are they doing this? But man, everything's coming. We got Jacob Mizorowski's pulling holographic Charizards in the post game. I mean, everything is coming up Brewers. This is really remarkable. So I don't know. I mean, obviously they're also taking advantage of a struggling Mets team here. But I think the one individual player, we mentioned Isaac Collins. I know Foolish Baseball and Jake kind of covered Isaac Collins. We got an email about him last week, his kind of sneaky rookie of the year case. Let's zoom in on Woodruff because I think he's a really important character. The velocity is not back really at all. and he's succeeding. So what have you seen from Woodruff so far? Because I think he's a really important person that when the Brewers do get to October, the average fan's going to be like, well, there's Brandon Woodruff. I mean, here we go. We got Woodruff Peralta again. This is a guy you're scared of in the postseason. The results kind of you can't deny, but this is a different pitcher than we saw before his shoulder surgery.
Yeah, there's certain times on the pitching side where I'll see something and I'm just a little confused, you know? And I think I'm getting that with Brandon Woodruff. I mean, he's down almost 3 miles per hour from his peak back in like 2020, 2021. So as a result of that, it seems like the Brewers took his old slider and kind of split it into more of a cutter and a sweeper. And in his first two outings off this shoulder surgery he had, I think it was like capsule surgery in his shoulder, which I think for the most part, everyone's like, hey, okay. Like, it's been a pleasure watching you, Brandon Woodruff. But right. Instead, what's happened is like he added the cutter sweeper. He threw those for the first two outings of his off the IL. And then in his last couple starts, he's basically backed off those pitches. And the reason is that the four seam has just been mowing guys, like absolutely killing them. And I'm like kind of baffled at it, particularly because the location of the pitch is really centralized over the zone. So he's kind of just like ripping fastballs middle. And he's playing like that three fastball approach where it's like sinker off it. And again, he's kind of throwing this cutter off it, but it's kind of baffling to me he's been this good. The changeup looks great. He's throwing more sinker, so they're kind of mitigating some of the velo drop and pulling away from the four-seam. But the underlying stuff is fantastic. It's just this is one of those scenarios where I don't necessarily know if I believe the underlying stuff totally. Mm. I'm wondering whether the centralized fastball approach and some of the barrels he's allowing are going to catch up with him. Sure. I still think he's like an above-average pitcher. It's just a matter of like, is he a 3-8 guy rest of season, or is he a 3-flat? Like, that's a massive difference, and yes, that's the difference probably between starting like game 2 for the Brewers and maybe like game 3 or piggybacking.
Sure.
So
sure,
I'm a bit confused with how he's been able to be this successful. I just 3 mile per hour downtick, man. I mean, yeah, I would fade that. He's got a 30% K minus walk. It's just nuts.
Sure, sure. Although I got to push back, Lance. You don't believe in the underlying. You don't believe in the surface numbers. What do you believe in? What?
No, most kidding. Of the time, I'm believing in the underlying. This is just such an odd case to me. I know.
I would say separate from, and I mean, fantastic analysis as always. I my favorite thing about Woodruff is, again, took a while for him to get back, not just from the shoulder surgery. He had all these weird things happening in the minors. He was taking like comebackers. He was like twisting his ankle. Like he kept his...
Yeah, he had his second IL stint in the minors,
right? Yeah, he had
his
second IL stint. Like it kept getting pushed back and back and back to where it was like, man, it's been a long time since he pitched. Now here he is. Just another thing that's going well for the Brewers. So, you know, credit to him. Obviously, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball before this injury. So even if you lose some of the velo, let's not be too shocked that he's kind of finding ways to be successful beyond that. So I'm glad you highlighted that series coming up with the Cubs. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit about them more later. But Milwaukee, I mean, my goodness. And I would say the other big note with Milwaukee is William Contreras heating up again is a big deal, right? When we talked about Milwaukee a few weeks ago, we kind of talked about how, you know, they are succeeding. But when they were doing this last year and we were like, how are they doing this? They did have star level performance from Churio, from Yelich, from William Contreras, who looked like one of the best catchers in baseball. Contreras really wasn't hitting like that for the first few months. Now we're starting to see that power surge again. That just totally changes the complexion of their lineup and clearly makes a big difference for them. So I think that's a huge deal as they continue to push towards, you know, really wrapping up this NL Central title, which suddenly looks a lot more comfortable than we ever would have expected. But as you mentioned, 5 games against the Cubs coming up soon, that will say a lot there. Anything else on Contreras? And then a quick word on the Mets, yikes.
Barrel rate's been down for Contreras for a bit, so I don't know. His peripheral stuff looked fine to me. I was just kind of waiting for this to happen.
Yeah,
and it's happening.
Yeah, no, it looks like some of the underlying stuff has improved a lot in August in particular. As for the Mets, I mean, 7 losses in a row. They're now closer to the Reds than they are to the Padres in the wild card race. They won 7 in a row in July. Since then, they've lost 11 of 12. So interesting homestand coming up with the Braves and then the Mariners. Again, the Mets, I mean, they're not sweat. Like, clearly the Phillies are kind of running away from them. We're about to talk about them. But I you know, this is fortunately, it's honestly kind of the same thing as the Yankees, which is like, wow, you look terrible. you're still in postseason position because there's not a lot of teams really pushing you. But you can probably only survive that for so long. So Mets, we're just going to push you to the side right now, and we will see what happens there.
But I got to bring up, though.
Yeah,
please. Marte, I looked. Oh, yeah. Because when I saw that play, I was like, is he that slow? Because he rounded third, and if the camera cuts are accurate in terms of timing, I believe it was Perkins in center field.
Yep, Perkins.
Had the ball, like just got the ball, and Marte was past third. So it was a fine send, but I didn't realize Marte was this slow. If you look at sprint speed leaderboards this year, names faster than him, I'm going to give you three quick. Yuli Gurriel, who I kind of forgot was still in the league.
41?
Spencer Torkelson, big dude, didn't figure he was quick. And then the name that is the penultimate here, Max Muncy has a faster sprint speed than Starling Marte.
Oh, my God.
You're washed if that happens.
That is, I'm concerned. You know, Gurriel that's enough of a ding.
Gurriel's crazy, right? Yeah.
That's it is funny how when you have plays like that at home, it's like when they show the replay, either you're like, what an horrible send, or how is he that slow? Those are the two options.
Yeah, those are the decision trees. Yeah,
and then in that spot, though, right? I mean, forget the even an individual play. That's a tough look. Why are we not just pinch running Tyrone Taylor? But anyway, as everything is going well for the Brewers, that is not the case for the Mets. Speaking of things not going well for the Mets, the Phillies sweeping the Texas Rangers in Texas. This Kyle Schwarber fella, good ball player. He hits his 41st home run on Friday. Big Trey Turner game. They cruise then. Christopher Sanchez continues to dominate. Nice little bounce back from Jesus Luzardo on Saturday. He had been struggling, particularly with runners on base. He looks better. Corey Seager hits a late home run. That is not enough as the Rangers offense continues to be just terrible. I don't really know how else to say it. That is the reason they
Brett
are not
Boone,
in
baby.
Postseason
Brett
position.
Boone.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know why Brett Boone, you know, come on. He hasn't brought his knowledge. He hasn't made a difference. Is it his fault? Probably not. Then on Sunday, we probably had the most interesting result as Zach Wheeler is not throwing very hard, but still has a pretty good outing. He does allow a homer to Jock, but Harrison Bader robs a home run. And Yoan Duran, who is amazing, locks it down once again as the Phillies win 4-2 and sweep the Texas Rangers. They suddenly have a 5.5-game lead over the Mets. Let's focus on Zach Wheeler here because we just had a conversation about Brandon Woodruff, who, you know, is succeeding despite his velocity being down. This is a little bit of a different case as Wheeler was throwing hard earlier this season. Dealt with a little bit of shoulder soreness that pushed his start back. He says, like, I'm chilling now. We treated it. No worries. We did imaging. I'm good. I'm Zach Wheeler. It's hard not to watch this and at least wonder what it's going to look like moving forward. But clearly, he was still finding ways to succeed.
The quote here is, quote, I'm not concerned. It'll come back. So, yeah, he's down like 2.5. It's chunky. I was a little surprised. I mean, he was below 95 for a pair of starts back in April. And this year, his velo actually jumped back up. He was a little bit down last year. He was like 95.5. I know we're splitting hairs, but he was like 96 flat this year. So, yeah, this is one. I mean, him and Thompson don't seem to be expressing any concern. So I'm like, I'm just waiting. And this is one of those you just got to see another start or two and see where it is. Because I don't know if this continues for, I'd say, more than two starts. Like two, you're like waving the yellow flag. And then like if it gets to three, it's a red flag. So I guess we needed a couple more days here to panic.
Yeah, and obviously he still pitched pretty well, and they still won. And so it's also one of those things where it's like, all right, you keep winning, you keep, you know, throwing up zeros. How much are we going to really panic? But I mean, yeah, the Phillies have been basically the best team in baseball at keeping their pitchers on the field. I mean that
yeah, really
if you
good.
Look at if you look at their guys, both the workload. Now I know the Nola one has been kind of weird and fluky and not even arm related, so it's hard to, you know, take too much of that. And he's of course been one of the most durable pitchers in the league until this season. But this is still really important, right? Because we know that the Phillies, that is their superpower, is that they don't need that many good relievers because their starting pitching has generally been so good. That said, I have to ask. You spend so much time analyzing pitchers and the real. Sometimes Yoan Duran is just like, well, yeah, duh, of course he's the best. He's throwing on the 100 mile an hour splitters. Like, do you even bother to? I know he's had some amount of evolution since he arrived in the big leagues, but to me, this is why I just said, hell yeah, Dave Dombrowski. Like, he was clearly the guy. I know there were a lot of relievers getting moved, but to me, even compared to Mason Miller and compared to some of these guys, I was like, this is the one to get. whether he was a rental or whether he had 2.5 years of control, Duran always felt like the one to go after. And I think we've seen that so far. I mean, he's ridiculous.
He is, yeah. I mean, he's really hard to barrel. I think that's the big thing. I think you look at some of like the Padres' arms. They run like a bunch of these big fastballs, which I love. I mean, like Mason Miller, Robert Suarez, Estrada. You know, Duran is like, I throw really hard and you can't lift me. So it's like,
yes,
that's the combination that I think is really difficult when you get into late game situations where it's like, okay, if you're throwing hard with a big fastball, I think I could maybe clip a barrel on you late and get like a multi-run homer. There's always that chance.
Yes.
With Duran, it's like, you're not going to hit him, and then if you hit him, it's probably going to be like a single, so you got to do that 3 times, which just isn't happening.
No, and that's what I've said many times about him. Like, the combination of grounders and strikeouts, and honestly, like, pretty decent control. I mean, a lot of relievers are walking way more guys than he is, so he is outrageously good. So Philly's sitting pretty, 5.5 up on the Mets, and you know, within striking distance of also maybe claiming the best record in baseball. So Phillies, good for you. Let's go. We have 2 more sweeps. Let's go to Seattle. Oh boy. How about these Mariners? They take all 3 over the Tampa Bay Rays. It is Ichiro number retirement weekend. Another Ichiro speech was obviously tremendous. More on that in a second.
He was sharp, too. Sharp in the suit.
Dude, doesn't get any cooler than Ichiro. Friday, we have Luis Castillo, Drew Rasmussen. Both look very good. Cal Raleigh, oh, one of the moments of the season. Go ahead, 3-run homer off of Griffin Jackson in the bottom of the 8th. Matt Brash strikes out the side for the save. Mariners win 3-2. Ichiro Day on Saturday, he gives this amazing speech where you just have this image of Julio and all the Mariners on the top step, you know, listening to his speech and just like, Ichiro directly addressing the team, being like, hey, guys, I won, you know, 116 games as a rookie. I thought winning was easy. And then I didn't make the playoffs ever again, basically, right? Like he was like, winning is hard. This is not a simple thing. You understand this. I understand this. You got to take advantage when you have a team like this, a moment like this, an opportunity like this. Really cool. And then, hey, sometimes you have these cool pregame ceremonies and then the team goes out and lays an egg and it's like, well, that was lame. Come on, guys. Instead, you get the opposite. You have 2 Julio homers. You have Cal hitting his 44th home run. Oh my God, that's so many home runs. They win 7-4 on Saturday. And then on Sunday, they blitz Adrian Hauser in the first inning. Cal Raleigh hits another home run, 45 home runs. Oh my God, ties Johnny Bench, 2nd most by a catcher ever. Sal Perez, you are in danger officially. Josh Naylor homers. Brian Wu goes 6 innings for his 23rd straight start, tying or first time pitcher to do that to open a season since Clayton Kershaw in 2019. And the Mariners win 6-3. They go 9-1 on the homestand against the Rangers, White Sox, and Rays. Now they have a 9-game road trip against the Orioles, Mets, and Phillies. They have passed Boston. They are in the first wild card spot in the American League, just a 0.5 game behind Houston. And it is pretty hilarious that now here we are talking about a Mariners offense that is by far the best that I've seen since I've been following them, which is about 15 years and a little less than that, like not even close. The lineup is so deep and so good. And even with Suarez not really doing anything so far, Naylor's been awesome. Cal's been awesome. Randy, Julio's heating up. Like, what a lineup. The pitching is healthier than it's been all season, and Bryce Miller's coming back now. Very excited to read Lance's words about Bryce Miller as he comes back, because boy, did he look bad before he went down, and I really wasn't counting on much of him for the rest of the season. The pitching, you still have Brian Wu, you still have Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, are not at their best, but it's looking better. But, I mean, Mariners are cooking, man. This is what it's supposed to look like. This is looking like one of the more complete teams in the American League. I still think they're an arm or two short in the bullpen, but if Brash and Munoz are throwing well, that's still a pretty good recipe. So what do you take of Seattle recently?
Yeah, I mean, Wu's fascinating from a pitching standpoint. He throws a bunch of a four-seam and a sinker. I think he throws those like a combined 75% of the time, which is really unorthodox,
it's the highest,
but it
right?
works.
I don't know.
Yeah,
is anyone else throwing that many fastballs?
I was
going
to try to pull that up
yeah.
quick, but I'm just yeah. believing that it's true because it's
sorry,
insane
it's
that he does that.
We don't need to fact check it. I believe it. It sounds right.
Yeah. He's unbelievable. Josh Naylor has 22 stolen bases. I believe his previous career high was 10. That's just crazy to me. He's got 22 in 108 games, too.
He might steal 30, man. I don't know.
He might steal 30
and not get to 20 home runs.
Yeah, yeah. Adrian Hauser in that game threw 40. I was watching it, or I was watching the middle of that game, and then they said that Hauser threw, I think it was 43 pitches in the first inning.
Yeah.
And then ended up going, I think, 5+, which is just really impressive. Cal Raleigh's pulling everything in the air. So that's like a basic hitting concept that is really starting to catch on. And I think a lot of the old hats will say, like, no, stay to right center, you know, but. A lot of guys break out through pulling fly balls and line drives. And we're seeing that with like Matt Shaw, not to go back to the Cubs, but Raleigh's a great example of it. He's crushing the ball and he's going to shatter that bench record, man. He's going to get to like 55, 60.
Oh, he's, well,
maybe
right.
Not 60,
Sal,
but.
Yeah. So Sal Perez, 48 is the record. He's going to,
48.
But the, but the switch hitting record, like coming for Mickey Mantle, I mean, he's going to set all kinds of records. And we'll, I guess he's going to be right there in the MVP conversation. We'll see how Judge's rest of his season goes, especially if he's not playing in the outfield. We will see with that. But yeah, no, as you said, like Cal pulling the ball in the air, which he was already really good at. Now he's essentially the best in the league. If you look at just pull and from both sides of the plate, that's the other thing. He's incredible at it, both lefty and righty. And it was funny because he hit his first opposite field home run at home in his career. Now, that was off Joe Boyle. This was the one other pitcher I wanted to mention here before we talk about the D-backs and Rockies for 2.5 seconds, is pitchers like Joe Boyle, because Joe Boyle has fascinated me. I mean, since he was at Notre Dame, like this dude has, he is breaking all the, if you've heard of like Stuff Plus and the pitching models, it's Joe Boyle. Joe Boyle is the poster child. And yet he's not very good. And so I'm not saying he can't be good. I'm rooting for Joe Boyle. He's apparently an awesome dude. He wants to turn this incredible physical stuff into consistent outs. He has gotten to the point where he throws enough strikes to be a major league pitcher, but it is pretty funny to watch someone throwing 100 with these ridiculous sliders and just get shelled. And it just doesn't matter. It's a reminder of how good big league pitchers are or big league hitters are. It's a reminder of how small the margins are between succeeding in the minors, succeeding in the big league, succeeding in, as a starter, succeeding in relief. And I just think for someone like you, who I'm sure it's easy to you know, poop out a Stuff Plus model or a pitching report card and be like, oh my God, Joe Boyle has the best stuff on the planet. And it's like, yeah, but you know, it's more than that. You can't just have that. So I'm sure you have enjoyed and have been frustrated watching Joe Boyle over the years, but I just wanted to throw his name out there because every time I watch him, I'm like, this is hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. The Rays took away his like larger, he had a sweeper and a curveball with the Athletics and they took both those away in game like this. I think it's actually a splitter, but I think it might be tagged as a sinker. It's like this hard, weird pitch, kind of like splinkery thing that is decent. You know, I mean, it gives him something arm side. He's not throwing as much four seam to righties, which is helpful. But yeah, I mean, in the Stuff Plus world, like Stuff Plus is generally higher for relievers, which makes a lot of sense. They throw harder on average. And you have to combine that with like a, you know, Eno Saris does this a lot, does great work on like his location plus. So you could just look at this through walk rate, but location plus is quicker. So like if a guy's up in the majors for a short period of time, or like, you know, you could look at some discrepancies between guys who have good location pluses but high walk rates and go, why is this happening, you know? But Boyle has like reliever command is the problem. And I mean, there's a baseline level of command you need to get to. Like there's some really good starters who don't have great command. I'd argue, like, I think Dylan Cease is there. We're going to talk about him in a bit, but like Snell, even a Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, Ohtani.
I mean, I haven't looked at his this year, but in the past when he threw, like he had borderline reliever command, but his stuff was so good it worked. Boyle's like a step below that. So it's tough, man. Like he's had some good outings this year, which is really impressive. I guess you get like a Chase Happy team against him and it works, but otherwise, it doesn't. My main takeaway from the Mariners, I think my hot take is that I think both Toronto and Houston don't win their divisions, who are currently the front runners. I'm going to go Seattle in there, and I'm going to go Boston. I just think, I'm looking at the playoff picture in the AL and the NL, and I'm like, I think all the teams currently in the wild card are the teams that get into the playoffs, and the rest of the season is just about seeding, which is maybe like a cynical don't watch baseball for the next month and a half, but I think that seeding is going to be fascinating.
I think people are going to watch baseball.
No. if you made it to the 30-minute mark of this podcast, you're watching baseball for the rest of the season, I think seeding is going to be huge, and I think Toronto and Houston maybe jump out, so we'll see.
Lance has the script, folks, so you don't have to tune
into
anything else. But anyway, with Seattle, we will see how this roster kind of balances out, especially as they maybe do get healthier on the mound. What does that rotation start to look like? by the end of the season. And that's the other thing, especially if they do, you know, make the postseason and make a postseason, you know, how they slot their rotation, if they're able to choose it,
yeah,
is going to be really interesting, right? Because that's been, I think, what's been fun and obviously a luxury for Mariners fans in the past few years is you'll have stretches where it's like, oh, Luis Castillo's the best pitcher. And then you're like, oh, well, George Kirby's the best pitcher. It's like, oh, well, clearly Logan Gilbert's the best pitcher. And then now it's Brian Wu, right? And so even Bryce Miller has had runs where he's been incredible. So how that pitching staff kind of shakes out will be very interesting. But as Ichiro said, it's right there. Go do it. Astros are still banged up. You have this great lineup. They have a 9-game road trip, as I mentioned, coming up. We'll see how they do against Baltimore, the Mets, and the Phillies. As for the Rays, tough. I know that run differential is still positive, but they are on a 4-city road trip, which doesn't exist except for seasons where your stadium got ruined. So they are now going to play the A's and Giants on their long road trip. All right, one more sweep before we take a break. Don't have to talk much about this. The Diamondbacks swept the Rockies. Zach Gallen looked better. Little late, my guy. I mean, I guess this is important for him as he still has free agency looming and the Diamondbacks are going to have to make a decision about their qualifying offer and whatnot. So Zach Allen looking better is nice because we like Zach Allen and I would like to see him succeed. But, you know, I'm sure they would have liked to see that before the deadline. They could have traded him for some more pitching prospects, but they'll take it. Corbin Carroll had a big weekend. And the Rockies are not a good baseball team. They're 30-87, which is a really, really bad record. The Diamondbacks, okay, great. You're back to a positive run differential. You're still 6 games back. Whatever. I mean, I don't, you know, snakes, right? Kids, this is obviously last season, and you're still going to keep scoring runs because you still have a lot of good hitters, but I'm not expecting too much the rest of the way. Maybe I will be wrong. Quick thoughts on Zach Allen before we go to break.
Yeah, he's throwing sinkers now, which I think means he's down bad. So we'll see what happens in the offseason with his slider and cutter. Because that's the pitch design? That just disappeared.
You go to sinkers and you're like, oh, no.
Well, the dude's thrown four seams his entire life.
No, it's true.
Like,
literally,
true.
If you're suddenly throwing sinkers, you're not going well.
Right. Something is wrong here.
If Zach Allen is suddenly throwing sinkers, it's like, oh, boy, he really must be trying to shake things up. Yeah. No, that's a fair point. But
he's a fun reclamation project. I'm curious to see who signed him this offseason.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I don't know, because it was so funny. Like at the deadline, we're talking about Sandy and Gallen, literally the two highest ERAs in baseball were like those were two pitchers.
Yeah, we were talking about. Maybe that's why the starting pitching market didn't work, right? Everyone's like, this guy's got a 5-5. You want me to give you my top three prospects for him? I don't know about that.
Save that. We're about to talk about the Cubs. All right, we're going to take a break.
When we return,
we will hit a few more notable series from the weekend. We'll be right back on Baseball Podcast. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jordan Schusterman, Lance Brozdowski. We have more ball to talk about. Let's go around the league. All right, Lance. It's time to talk about the Cubbies of Chicago, who you get to watch and analyze for a living. What a treat it was for the first few months of the season. Ooh, a little bit less fun lately as they drop a series against the Cardinals, who are just kind of hanging around, just on that road to 81, vibing. Baby. They are not bad. Are they good? I don't think so, but they're definitely not bad. Not a bad team, but probably not a good team. Anyway, the Cardinals do take 2 out of 3 this weekend. They shut out the Cubs on Friday. Big Jordan Walker game. Nice to see that from him. I would love for Jordan Walker to like be a good baseball player. That'd be really nice.
I think he just needs to leave the Cardinals. That feels like one of those.
I'm sure you.
It's Andrew Vaughn. He's the new Andrew Vaughn, right?
Oh, Andrew. Whoa, man. Yeah, well, that's pretty extreme comparing the Cardinals to the White Sox. Oh my goodness. But maybe. But I like Jordan Walker. I'd like to see him succeed. So they shut out the Cubs on Friday. Cubs bounce back. Big offensive explosion on Saturday. They win 9-1. Another home run from Matt Shaw. Michael Bush goes yard. Colin Ray continues to get out somehow. But then on Sunday Night Baseball, on the national stage, the Cubs lose. Oh my gosh, come on, Cubs. You're supposed to be this awesome team. Sonny Gray looks fantastic. Matt Shaw homers again, but that is not enough. As JoJo Romero slams the door. 4-out save. Cardinals win 3-2-2. As we mentioned, the Cubs are now a 5.5 back of Milwaukee. They are still I believe, in that top NL wildcard spot. Still a game and a half up on the Padres. But they have not been playing super great recently. We got the All-Star game in 2027. I feel like if the Cubs were playing better and if we knew for sure we were having baseball in 2027, that would feel a lot more exciting. So yes. While I am looking forward and expect to be at the All-Star game in 2027 at Wrigley Field, I think that'll be awesome. That we didn't really talk about that, so I just wanted to mention that. But very simply, Lance, what's the vibe here? Because I think some of this you could have seen coming on the pitching side. Some of this is an offense that looked like the best in baseball, kind of regressing to a more inconsistent state. So I don't know if you want to start with the hitting or the pitching, but take it wherever you want.
Yeah. I mean, they feel deflated after the deadline to me. I don't even think it was particular to maybe the deadline. Like, they made a couple of reliever moves. They got Willie Castro, and then the Soroka injury is probably the deflating part, where it's like, that was kind of the bet, you know? I think they had some things internally on, like, let's get the Vila back up, and then he just goes down immediately. They feel deflated. And I'd say that because I think the bet the whole time here has been this offense is really good. It's top five in baseball, and, like, we'll play as such. And now you're running into a stretch where PCA is, like, 2 for his last 31 with no walks and a 40% strikeout rate. You have Matt Shaw, who's hitting really well, but that's not going to make up for the fact that, like, Kyle Tucker, as the StatCast broadcast mentioned last night, his bat speed's been down about, like, 2 ticks. Petriello equated this to, like, basically 10 feet on every fly ball, which is, like, that's pretty considerable, especially in the wind in Chicago, so that's not great. Say Suzuki been slightly cold as well, so you just have, like, a weird confluence of everyone getting cold. The solace here is there's no way that Pete's just going to have this bad of a stretch down for the final month and a half here. And Tucker's got to bounce back. You know, there's some rumors about, like, some finger stuff there that I've seen floating on social media of, like, he jammed it a while back. And maybe that's why the bat speed's down. But I looked at that and, like, it seemed like the bat speed rebounded after that. On the pitching side, I mean, they're in a weird spot. I've said that they're going to go to, like, pitching chaos because they don't really have, like, a true guy. And I mean, I guess it's Shota, and the fact that he was down with a hammy injury earlier this year is probably, like, a great is a solace for this team, because otherwise you'd have him. I mean, he's the guy that could take on big workload. He could probably get to 200 innings without an issue because of what he's done in the prior years. Matthew Boyd hasn't thrown over 80 innings since 2019. Cade Horton hasn't thrown over 70 in his career. And Colin Ray is, like, still gobbling up innings. Like, I don't know who you're rolling out in a postseason series, and that's what they're trying to figure out for the rest of the season here.
And I remember when we were hanging out at All-Star, we were kind of looking ahead to the deadline and be like, okay, well, the Cubs are obviously going to add someone. I mean, they have to.
Yeah.
It's not just a matter of, oh, we want that impact postseason starter. It's that, like, we're going to need the innings. I mean, it's that's what is so crushing about the Soroka thing, is not even just like, oh, we were going to turn him into something that he wasn't with the Nats. It's that, like, you needed someone to go out there.
You just need another arm. Yeah.
To pitch 5 or 6 innings. And I think that's what's most, we kind of touched on the Cubs a little bit at the end of, I talked about Soroka's injury on Friday's podcast and how disappointing it was. And, like, the Cubs deadline, why weren't you more aggressive? You were so aggressive to get Tucker, and now you're kind of playing, you know, half measures. What the heck? But I think the other perspective on the Cubs pitching, which is so disappointing, another way to spin it, is how many things are going right. Oh my God, this season for Matthew Boyd. Oh my God, Cade Horton has this scoreless inning streak, and Colin Ray's given you way more than you ever could have expected. And, like, there are a lot of in the bullpen, what the bullpen has been able to do since it was catastrophic in April is so impressive. And so you have all these things that are actually going well, and yet you're still kind of like, this is not good enough. And so that's where I get concerned. I think Horton is the one I'm so fascinated about. I wrote about him last week with that innings limit. I don't know if you have a sense for where they're kind of going with him from here, but I mean, he's clearly starting to settle in. I know he's not really striking out a lot of guys, but clearly he's finding ways to get outs consistently. So you mentioned that pitching chaos. Some of that might be by necessity, but that also requires a ton of buy-in from the players and the coach. Like, everyone needs to be on the same page to execute that, as Detroit showed us last year. Yeah. And as Detroit has showed us this year, it's also not that simple. It's not a strategy that you really want to go to on purpose. So how that manifests, I think, will be really interesting.
Fascinated to see. Yeah. I mean, I don't have the greatest sense as to what they're, I know they're looking at workload things internally. Like they're a pretty smart org with this stuff. You know, they're pulling Hawkeye reports and doing jump testing, you know, for central nervous system recovery. Like they're doing all the crazy stuff that gets you to a number, and they're probably tracking that number. And I don't know, like there's a point at which some of these guys are probably going to maybe subtly max out. They're super cautious in the minors with Jackson Wiggins. You know, that was the guy that I was getting texts from other orgs about in regards to like, hey, why isn't he throwing? And I was like, I've been told it's workload. And they're like, well, why is he still not throwing? It's August 11th now. So it was like a weird one. He was the piece that I thought they were going to ship. And I think that was the piece everybody wanted. And this is the one they did not ship. So we'll see where that goes. But yeah, I mean, I think you just have to probably turn these guys into crochet. I think particularly with Horton, and what I mean by that is like going to the 3 to 4 innings with Horton. I think Boyd, I'm wondering whether you just throttle Boyd and it's like, hey, dude, you're going to throw 220 and your arm's going to fall off. And then like you've already recouped the entire value of your contract in 1 year.
Oh, he's been incredible. And he's at least, you know, it's weird because he hasn't thrown, as you said, the workload hasn't been there in years, but like, he has done it before in a way that Cade Horton has not. And he's 34 and he's a veteran. And of course, he is having this awesome season. So I think that it is more likely that like, boy, they're just going to kind of let him ride.
Roll him. You're like, dude, we just need to give you 6. Like it's going to be October and his velo is going to be down, but he's still going to be dotting things. And he's going to be the 6th, 7th inning, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas with Horton, hey, man, I think.
I mentioned him as a joke earlier, but maybe Brandon Birdsall does become a character.
Birdsall just got hurt, actually.
All right. Well, never mind.
I'm sorry. I hate to say it. I think he's actually done for the season. So.
Oh, man. Thank you. You should have told me. I embarrassed myself earlier referencing Brandon
Birdsall.
I thought you were doing it
a bit off the top because you were like sarcastically saying that he was helpful because he's
Lance,
hurt.
I like to think I try to keep track of all 30 teams.
That's
I try
a deep
to cover minor leaguers. Brandon Birdsall's health is not one of those. Is Connor Nolan still pitching?
Dude's the weirdest pitcher in my
I know. That's probably not one we want to be relying on in October. But anyway, sorry. Enough.
Spencer Turnbull at AAA, though. Spencer Turnbull, don't worry. He's back. Oh,
I am worried.
Yeah, there
actually.
You go, right?
You can't pitching say chaos. You can't chaos. Say don't. That would definitely qualify as chaos if Spencer Turnbull turns out to be plan A. Anyway, Cubs, most importantly, is you need to get back to being the best offense in the league. Or one.
You just got
to
hit. Yeah. You can figure out
that's still no matter what. It's nothing on the mound is going to matter if the offense looks like this. So
exactly.
That is pretty simple. And so either it will get back to looking awesome or it won't, and they won't go very far. All right, let's go to the American League, where the Yankees of New York continue to embarrass themselves, losing a series at home to the Houston Astros. Devin Williams inexplicably gets thrown right back into the fire on Friday, and extras allows a home run to Taylor Trammell, who, by the way, love Taylor Trammell. I'm so happy that he's found a place on the Houston Astros. Well, what a guy. Cool to see him find a role there. Altuve homers in that one. Yankees lose. Giancarlo Stanton plays the outfield on Saturday. How about that? Back and
not
forth
on the
game.
IL yet. Let's
not
go.
On the IL yet. Yeah, it's nice that we haven't seen like a Stanton outfield, you know, misplay yet. That's good.
I'm
happy for him. That said, while this the Yankees did win this game, Trent Grisham, who essentially only hits incredibly clutch home runs, every single home run he hits is just like, oh my god, what a spot. He kind of bails them out. Bednar bails them out again. Here's a ridiculous stat. David Bednar already has, I think, 3 5 out appearances, which he had like 3 of over the previous 2 seasons. With the Yankees. The Yankees have already asked for 5 outs of Bednar 3 times in like 10 days, which is hilarious. They do win that game on Saturday, although that was also the day where they had the Yankees old-timers game. Mariano Rivera tears his Achilles. Are you kidding? This is how the Yankees season is
incredible.
Going? Really? This horrible. And as you rightly noted here, how are we not having StatCast on this?
Come on, baby. This is like such a layup.
Come on. Like, I mean,
I want to know the Mariano exit velocity on the single yet.
Right.
Like, this stuff matters to me.
He hit a single earlier before he got injured. I would love to know what Mariano's bat speed looked like. I want to see what his stance looks like with the really advanced,
you know
where he's standing in the box and stuff.
And also, too, like I texted someone in the Cubs org way back when Ben Johnson, I don't know, talking football here, I'm sorry. He threw out the first pitch of the Cubs game.
Yeah,
and he was hard. And I was like, I need to know the velo on that. And I was like, this is the crossover that I can do. You know what I mean? He's like, you give me the velo.
Was it on?
I texted the source like 2 times and he just didn't respond. So I don't know if they have that internally, but that stuff's definitely on. That's on like well before first pitch.
First pitch, absolutely. Yeah.
I want first pitch velos. I want a ranking over the last 3 years of who's thrown the hardest. And I also want all old timers games on StatCast. Yep. Like these are very, very easy content plays by MLB here. Come on, guys.
Yeah, I don't know what we're waiting for there. I will say the other tough thing about this old timers day is that essentially you just have all of the Yankees talking about how bad the Yankees are.
It was great. Yeah. Like, and all their answers were like so ambiguous too. It's like, yeah, it's, you know, sometimes you just got to get that spunk back. And yeah, it's like, great. But how do you do that?
It's also so funny. Like it's such a lose-lose because obviously, if you played on the Yankees and you were just winning, oh, we just win World Series all the time. And I know that wasn't every single old timer that was there, but it's so easy for them to just put a mic in their face and they'll be like, I don't know what these losers are doing. Like, you got
to
do
we
this.
We tried like, to lose and couldn't. Yeah,
it's
you
like,
know?
But like, what are you gonna tell all the Yankees that won all the time? No, you're wrong. Because like, I don't know. Like, they probably are, they think it is easy. So. Anyway, kind of a hilarious like contrast to the Ichiro speech where Ichiro is like, guys, like this is the perspective that you need to keep.
That's a great point, actually.
All right. So the Yankees, but they win on Saturday. Okay. Oh, thank goodness. Yankees aren't going to get swept. Maybe this will rally them. Maybe this Grisham home run will push them to have a big game on Sunday. No, that's not what happens. Max Fried kind of struggles. Aaron Boone gets ejected. He got ejected by home plate umpire Derek Thomas. I don't know how obsessed you are with ump scorecards the way that I am, but I have not seen Derek Thomas's scorecard for this game yet, which I guess would probably come out here soon. Derek Thomas is literally the best ump in the league this year by strike zone. So you better know who you're coming after here.
It's okay,
because like, listen, if Laz or Andy Fletcher or some of these other terrible umpires, if they're having a bad day, go for it. Like, scream all you want, get ejected. Generally, Derek Thomas knows what he's doing, so we'll see. We can fact check that. But anyway, Altuve and Carlos Correa. Carlos Correa is on the Astros now, by the way. He hits a home run, and the Astros win 7-1.
You see, his celly around third was the don't rip my shirt off. You know, it was pretty great.
I did. Listen, the Astros now with Correa back, we got to get back into full villain mode. You started to lose this last year. Last year, it was like, okay. And then obviously they fell on their face in October and it was like, oh man, it might be over.
They might play in that wild card play. They got a shot. Yankees Astros. That could be a three game shot.
And now Correa's back and it's like, oh, well, everybody hates them again. This is great. So
perfect.
That's exactly what they should embrace. And Carlos Correa is the perfect guy to do it. That said, Astros, again, they still have some issues, but generally, they are in a Mariners are coming, so they're going to have to fend them off. But what a week in Houston. We've got Carlos Correa's home debut back with the Astros. We've got Alex Bregman back in Houston for the first time with the Red Sox. And then I really want your take on this. I don't know how closely you've been following his rehab outings, but Christian Javier returning for Houston. That is a huge arm. I mean, this dude, when he's on, man, holy crap. Again, you want to temper expectations because he's coming back from serious surgery, but that is a game-changing talent. For them to add, obviously, amidst so many injuries on the mound this year.
Yeah, he would be a big get. I mean, they were stitching together like, what's that? Brandon Walter, Hunter Goodman. Hunter Goodman's a Rocky, but he's
Gusto before
Hunter
the trade.
Hunter Goodman sounds like an Astros pitcher, even though he's in Rockies.
You know what I mean? He does. Yeah, Brandon Walter, about Colton Gordon.
Colton Gordon, that's who I'm thinking of. You were thinking of
Tanner Gordon, Hunter Goodman, Tanner Hunter. All these guys are named the same, right? Kyle Tyler, he's out there somewhere. All these pitchers are named the same. So, yeah, no, they were patching it together. But Christian Javier, I mean, that guy's an impact pitcher.
Yeah, his velo was up a little bit. I don't know if he was throwing in shorter arms. I'm looking at he was 93 flat in his rehab. He was 91.5 last year, so if this surgery helped him pick up velo, that's not good for the AL in terms of trying to take back the West. So good luck.
No. And he's one of those guys with special four-seamer, right? I mean, that is a pitch that he has just relied on. And sometimes that results in a lot of fly balls, but he has really proven that pitch is very special for him. Yankees, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, here's what I'll say about the Yankees. You got the Twins coming to town this week? if the Yankees can't get right against the post deadline Twins, I know they've been playing better, but like Yankees
are they getting
Joe
Ryan?
Oh, they
probably, that's the question, right? Because that'd be interesting.
Probably are getting Joe Ryan later in the week. I'm not sure, but Yankees Twins, like this is when you are supposed to be look like the Yankees is facing the Twins.
Oh,
like
yeah,
this
yeah,
is
yeah.
this if it's not happening
you
now.
You own this team.
Yes. Like, you really need to remind us who you are in this week. If not, now we can start to sweat. And the Yankees do have, I think, the easiest schedule in the American League the rest of the way. Still 7 more games against the White Sox, 7 more games against the Orioles. But right now, they're losing to bad teams, too. So we'll see what happens with the Yankees. As for Houston, they Astros, man, they are really, really, really something. All right, let's stay in the American League East. Talk about the Blue Jays, who were very, very, very close to being swept by the Dodgers over the weekend. What a win on Sunday. Oh, my goodness. So they don't look good on Friday. They don't look good on Saturday. Kershaw out to Scherzer, Snell looks great, Otani's going off, and then on Sunday, I mean, Lauer was bad. Lauer's been so good for Toronto, and it's like, oh man, they're going to get swept. It's kind of a humbling moment for Toronto. Otani goes yard again. We get homers from Vlad, Barger, Ernie Clement, and then Jeff Hoffman completely melts down. 5 walks, only records 2 outs. But Mason Fluharty with, I mean, as far as just like out of nowhere performances. I mean, when they showed him coming in to Ohtani, bases loaded with a 1-run lead and 1 out, you're just like, this poor kid. I mean, what are we doing here?
That's what the bigs are made for, right? He's like a weird cutter like, sweeper here we go. Arm, throwing here 90, averaging 90. Ohtani's probably like, 90, you bringing him in?
Cutter sweeper, that's it. Coin flip, yep. Cutter sweeper, maxing out at 90. Strikes out Ohtani. Arguably strikes him out twice with the terrible call on the check swing and then bets the ground out. Blue Jays salvage on Sunday. I still think this was a very good weekend for the Dodgers to see the offense start to click, to see Mookie start to look better, to see Snell look the way that he did. I think there's a lot of positives. And Ohtani, I mean, holy crap. Like, what? Unbelievable. He's going to win MVP. Sorry. Especially if Pete continues to go over for the next 2 months. But
I was a bit disappointed they didn't make more moves at the deadline. Or not disappointed, but just a little surprised.
Yep.
You know?
Sure.
And I think a lot of the time, like, GMs and people are just be like, well, we have this guy coming off the IL, and that is our deadline move.
And you roll your eyes.
I kind of feel like the Dodgers actually can execute that properly because the names were good enough. Sometimes it's like they're trying to sell you. Like the Cubs are trying to sell you Jameson Taillon coming off the IL. Yes. Great dude. I love him. But like, it's not really a deadline acquisition. Javier Assad. Like, okay, are we getting World Baseball Classic Assad? Like, the Dodgers can go, okay, Bobby Miller all of a sudden is up in field. He's sitting 99 in the pen at AAA. Roki's going to come back. I think they bring him back as a reliever would be my guess, which is honestly what I kind of always thought he was. He's not. I don't think he's the mix to be a starting pitcher or the spin capacity or anything. And then you bring back Snell.
You know, maybe
exactly. Then you bring back Snell.
Yeah.
And Ohtani looks great. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh yeah, that's they're probably the favorite to win the World Series, right?
Muncy. I know you're focused on the pitchers, rightfully so.
Yes.
Muncy back is a huge,
huge,
deal.
Huge.
And that's where you start to have a lineup that is looks like the best in baseball, right? And if you do get Mookie going again, Freddie's been awesome, and Ohtani looking the way that he does. That is where they start to look terrifying. That said, to still kind of find a way, because the bullpen is still sort of not awesome, to find a way to lose this game on Sunday was disappointing and a really impressive showing for Toronto to kind of bounce back after those first two tough games and to maintain a still real lead in the AL East. So, you know, not a fun stretch. Still a little bit of some shaky moments there for Toronto. But I was impressed with kind of what they showed. And you mentioned Bobby Miller and Roki. Yeah, those two guys in how they contribute in any capacity down the stretch. It could be zero innings. It's possible we see them throw zero major league innings the rest of the way.
Yeah,
it's possible they end up being very important. We'll see what happens with Tanner Scott. They still have some other relievers that are coming back. But I mean, Ohtani, like. He looks better and better now on the mound every time out. The workload's increasing, and he's, you know, going to hit 50 homers again. So
pitching in Anaheim, big one.
Pitching in Anaheim this week. So that will certainly be something. All right, one more series before we take a break. That's the Padres taking 2 out of 3 over the Red Sox. Red Sox look good on Friday. They win 10-2. Walker Buehler finally looks good. He had been struggling. Get homers from Yoshida and Willier Abreu. Then on Saturday, the Padres win a close one. Lucas Giolito's command totally abandons him. CB Buckner was not helping. That's an umpire you can yell at. His zone sucks. No doubt
Take
about that.
No
by the
boon.
Way, by the way, Derek Thomas, 95% on Sunday. It does look like he favored the Astros a little bit, but Derek Thomas knows what he's doing. All right, we don't have to yell at him. Ramon Laureano walk-off single after Roman Anthony. Huge game-tying double off Robert Suarez. A little bit of discourse. Oh, Red Sox, look. They're looking at Robert Suarez's fastball and changeup looks on the iPad. Are they cheating? No. This is a thing you're allowed to do, which is you can upload really almost whatever you want as long as there's still images before the game, advanced scouting info. What you cannot have is live video. That's what the cheating is. Now, I can understand people being thrown off by this because it did look very explicit and Suarez gave up the run, whatever. You can disagree that teams are allowed to do this. That's a totally reasonable take. You could say ban the iPads. This is ruining baseball for one reason or another. But what they were doing is legal. So I don't really have much more to add about that.
The only thing I have to add is the screen grab that we saw was from like Gamera. Yeah, Gamera. I just combined game camera into one word. Game camera. The game cam. So like you're watching a game and you see like into the pitcher's glove from second base. That was the look they were giving. I didn't see exactly who the picture was being shown to. Maybe it was whoever was going on to second base to look like into Suarez's glove. That's my assumption, right? I just want to confirm that. Because if it's not, then like I don't know why they're showing the hitter the game cam view.
No, it would have been. It would have been the
man the on second, right? Okay,
That makes sense. Again, like you're allowed to try and get signs from second base. And by the way, every team is trying to do this, right?
Yeah.
Every team is trying to give their pitcher or give their base runners the information to potentially pick something up from behind. Like that's very standard. So
the league's not going to police that. Yeah, it is what it is. Like, figure out how to get your pitcher. What was the whole thing in the minor league side? It's like, why are stolen base rates so high? Like, why are our pitchers all slow to the plate? It's like they kind of just need to deliver the ball faster. you just need to cue them to throw. And it's like the same thing with pitchers. Like, if you're tipping, like you kind of just need to do something with your glove or hide the pitch. Like, just figure it out, man. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
No, 100%. So we don't have to spend too much more time on that. But anyway, Padres win that one late. Ramon Laureano, nice little pickup. He's a good player. And then on Sunday, this is the last thing I wanted to kind of zoom in on with your expertise, is Dylan Cease was very, very good. The Red Sox offense was not, but Dylan Cease really keeping him off balance. Padres win 6-2 on Sunday. And Dylan Cease was doing something very different. His pitch mix was more diverse than we've really seen it almost all season, if not his whole career. This is someone who has thrived on these two incredible pitches, his fastball and his slider, for essentially his whole career. And in this outing, he was throwing a smaller percentage of fastball sliders than he has been essentially ever, I think, or close to it. And this is notable. I mean, I want you to talk about Cease, but I also want you to talk about kind of the larger trend that we've seen this season of pitchers throwing more pitches. Now, this seems very basic, but this is something that I've thought about a lot, especially as I've read people like you, listen to you talk about this stuff, which is that when we talk about pitchers like Seth Lugo, and if we talk about just like the very basic premise of hitting and why is it hard to hit? Well, there's the basic thing is you have X amount of time to decide to hit a pitch that's coming this fast and moving this much and all these things, right? But I have always, in a very, very simple way, for the whole time I've done this job, I'm just like, well, wouldn't you just want to have more pitches so that the hitter is trying to think about more options? Whereas in the past few years, it felt like the trend was, hey, you have these two amazing pitches. Throw those, because that's what's good. And I know in the bullpen that is still mostly true. But for starters, it does feel like we are now realizing like, hey, wait a minute. If I throw more than two pitches, hitters can't guess what's coming. They can't key in on things, especially in hitters' counts and stuff like that. So as for Cease, as for big picture, what do you make of this trend?
Yeah. This was something I called kind of at the beginning of the year. I did like a bold predictions video, and one of them was that the average starting pitcher at, I don't remember the threshold I put, but it was something along the lines of like the top, let's say like 80% of starting pitchers, you know, like the average number of pitches they throw from a mixed diversity standpoint. So how many different pitches do they throw would eclipse five. And we've seen over the last 2 years, it increases like around 0.2-ish or so, which are actually pretty dramatic increases if you then compare, say, 2022 back to like 2014, where it's been pretty flat around like the low fours. So these last couple of years, we've seen this tick up. Michael Rosen from Fangraphs had a piece where he kind of recapped the first half trends, and he like checked in on the bull prediction I had, and he saw that it was like right up at five, which is, again, the largest year-over-year increase we've seen over the last probably... I mean, you could maybe argue in the history of the sport. I don't want to assume that, but you know, we only have Statcast for so long. You could probably say that this wasn't a trend in the past. Maybe, maybe it was. But anyways, it's the first probably in this century, in 2000 and such. So, Cease in particular is a great example. There's a lot of guys that are surviving just with this trend going on and are not embracing the trend. Like Hunter Green was always a name that I was particularly surprised by. And his ability to succeed with basically fastball slider, even though we all talked about the splitter and this curve sweeper thing he's thrown, and then he's like didn't throw him because he's like, oh, my four seam and my fast slider are just better. Cease yesterday threw a combined 63% four seam slider. That's his lowest usage combined of those two pitches since 2021 July, which is a very long time ago, obviously. And this is like a 3-start trend. I saw Eno Saris point this out as well. 3 starts in a row, he's been below 70% on both those pitches. Historically, he's hung right around like 88 to 90%. So it's a pretty big cut here. The main thing he's starting to push more of is his curveball. A good pitch, you know, like to lefties in particular. See, I think the big thing with some usage changes is like generally there's like a small window of time where the league is like, oh, you're doing that. I didn't realize that, you know. Walker Buehler had a start over the weekend where he threw like a bunch of four-seam fastballs. And he hadn't done that in a very long time, especially being on the Red Sox. You don't throw a lot of bad four-seams. And he succeeded with it. And now I believe Buehler goes into like Houston, I think, to face the Astros, who are one of the best righty four-seam hitting teams in baseball. So that's like, hey, you're going to do it now? Like, let's see. Is this actually a trend? With Cease, it seems like more of a thing that he's just going to stick with. Sure. He basically had the best 2-start stretch of his season doing this. And I'm curious to see if this is like just the way he'll pitch. Like, I think for a very long time, I've been wondering why he doesn't throw a faster changeup. That seems like a really easy layup for him, especially with all the things we have around the seam effect side, where guys who cut the ball can now kind of get to a horizontally separating changeup. That feels like a layup for whoever acquires him in the offseason to give him that and just be like, dude, you can't throw the 77. Like, it's cool and it's fun, but like, it's not a good pitch. Just throw it 85 to 90, which you can easily do. But yeah, the larger trend is just what we're talking about. Like, I think for the most part, stuff models get pretty caught up in like, good pitch, throw it a lot, you know, but starting pitching, I've seen like Jonathan Lucroy going to town on X here with his threads of like pitching, it's not throwing. And like, I mean, he clearly he's a great catcher. You know, it seems like he's a little not like if he was in a modern org, like they would be like, OK, some of these beliefs you have are incorrect. I'm not going to tell him that on X because I'm not Jonathan Lucroy. He's a great catcher. But I mean, I think at the end of the day, some of the things are true that he's saying, like starting is very different than relieving. And as a result of that, we've seen a lot of pitchers embrace this. Like, you just need more pitches, especially when you throw hard. Like, when you have that baseline of velocity, most of the things you add are going to be good or serviceable. And if you have, again, if you're a starter, it means you have some baseline level of command, which means you could probably put these pitches in different areas. And that's the trend we're seeing. Like, I don't really think this is going away. And it seems to be a natural byproduct of the last couple of years where every single year people add a new pitch, sweeper, splitter, blah, 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 like all this cool stuff, kick change this year, you know. And this is all summing up into like we've maxed out all the pitch types possible. Now it's a matter of just expanding the breadth of one's repertoire. Yeah. And that's really it. You just need more stuff. It helps with third time through protection, even probably second time through protection in terms of seeing hitters. Cease is doing it. And I'm going to guess it continues through the end of the year.
Yeah. And facing opposite handed hitters and. Yeah, all that stuff, it gives you more. Hey, I'd rather listen to Jonathan Lucroy on that than some of the other things he's posting about. So I agree. I agree with that. And but no, to your point, like not everyone can be Seth Lugo and have 10 different pitches, but it's not surprising that maybe more is better if you do have that command, you can execute it. And in Cease's case, it's amazing for him to be doing this for so long and then, you know, 2 months before free agency suddenly start mixing it up. Now some of that is a response to some of the results that he was getting, and maybe he wanted to change something to give him the best chance to succeed for the Padres in 2025, but it will be something to monitor as he goes into free agency, because he is going to be We did a version of this with Snell's free agency for sure, where it's like the ERA. I mean, it even more case where it's like a lot of walks, a lot of strikeouts. But you know, Cease has had also what he has that Snell didn't is the durability. I mean, that's the thing that he's been able to post. So yeah, I'm excited to. I mean, Dylan's awesome. He's one of my favorite pitchers to talk to in the league, and I'm excited to see what he does for the rest of this year, and then I hope he gets super duper paid. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. When we return, we will fly through the rest of the weekend and say goodbye. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast. Welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. It's time to go fast.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
All right, Lance, 7 more series to go. Let's begin in Atlanta, where they take 4 out of 5. You mentioned that the Cubs and Brewers are playing a 5-game series after a rainout earlier this year. That was the Braves and Marlins this weekend. Could the Marlins take advantage of their recent momentum and go into the Braves and house and make their season even worse? No. Braves kind of looked decent over the weekend. Of course, the headline from this weekend is Jen Powell making Major League history as the first woman to umpire a Major League game. That was fantastic. Very cool to see all of the reaction around that. We had a Jerickson Profar home run rob. We had Drake Baldwin hitting 2 home runs. Drake Baldwin is awesome. Maybe Isaac Collins is rookie of the year. Maybe it's Augustin Ramirez. I right now I'm voting Drake Baldwin. Maybe I was biased because he was my preseason pick and I think he's awesome. But
That's a great call there.
I just think he's great. Again, not a lot to feel good about with this Braves season, but Drake Baldwin is pretty high on the list. Edward Cabrera struck out 11 over the weekend, and I honestly thought he was going to be the one that was going to get traded. And Sandy would stay put. Obviously, they both stay put. What are you seeing from him recently?
Mixing it up in terms of usage, throwing a lot more breaking balls, and it's working really well. My question here is, do we think he is actually worth more from a prospect capital standpoint this offseason than he would be at the deadline? Because I think a lot of teams were looking at him going, well, the track record isn't there, but you give me another 40 innings of him dominating, and you go into next year, and you can make that a projection a lot more aggressive. And I wonder whether you got to pay up even more than you would have at the deadline for Cabby.
Yeah, you're kind of balancing, right? The how much better does he look versus get him for 3 playoff runs versus 2. So that's kind of
it's a great point.
The equation. But no, I agree with you. I mean, he's someone that you catch him on the right day. You're like, what more do you want to see? I mean, this guy's unbelievable. Meanwhile, Sandy, I know he'd started to look better. He struggles over the weekend. So we'll see what happens with him. I mean, he's such a tough one to figure out, especially, I'm sure, for people like you in your position trying to figure out what Sandy could do to get back to Cy Young form. But we will save that topic for another day. Let's go to the South side, where the Guardians take 2 out of 3 over the White Sox. This was a golden opportunity for the Guards to sweep a bad White Sox team and move past the Yankees. Instead, they just get a little bit closer to New York. Credit to Cleveland, though, playing much better. CJ Cephas is up. This is long overdue. I mean, he probably should have been up a month earlier for an offense that has been starved for any amount of consistency, any amount of power. He's a weird player. He's like a shorter first baseman. He's going to play some corner outfield. As a prospect at Miami, he wasn't someone where it was like, this is this big slugger, but a very advanced bat. The underlying metrics look great for him, and I'm excited to kind of get a closer look at Cephas here down the stretch. And listen, credit to Cleveland for all the nonsense that has gone wrong off the field for them and on the field for that matter. It's nice to see them playing better, and it looks like they will be relevant down the stretch. Whether they can pass the Yankees would be, again, probably says a lot more about the Yankees than the Guardians, but I'm glad as someone who lives near Cleveland that the Guardians have not totally, you know, melted away into irrelevance.
Yes, I totally agree. Cephas is a very good hitter. Data sees like 0 flaws in him. So really good barrel rate. You know, he's like good contact, good approach, no miss. Like he's going to be good.
Yeah, he's good. So that's a good addition. Guardians still 6 back of Detroit, but closer than I thought they'd get. So credit to them, yes. And only a half game behind the Yankees. Speaking of those Tigers, they take 2 out of 3 over the Angels. Tarik Skubal, his first bad start of the year. First time he doesn't make it through 5 innings all season, but the Tigers win that game as Matt Vierling hits a dramatic go-ahead pinch hit homer late for his first homer of the year. Old man Charlie Morton strikes out 10 on Saturday, but he does give up 6 runs as the Angels. We know the Angels are good at hitting home runs. Are they good at winning baseball games? Still not really, but they do hit homers, which they did on Saturday. Tigers bounce back on Sunday. Jack Kochanowicz struggles for Anaheim as the Tigers win 9-5. Let's stay in the AL Central. Twins take 2 out of 3 over the Royals. Joe Ryan continues to be good. The Bailey Ober was good on Saturday, but the Twins offense was not as the Royals shut them out 2-0. And then Luke Kuechel with a walk-off home run in the bottom of the 11th. This was disappointing. We had the Roku Sunday leadoff, which Jake and I talk about all the time. No free ads, but we're going to keep talking about it. And the way they do this is they basically smash two broadcasters together. They try to do a combo booth where they have one play-by-play from one team and the color from the other. And so we had the Royals broadcaster, and I'm forgetting his name. I apologize. And Justin Morneau in the booth for this one. And so, unfortunately, this Twins walk-off home run is called like a Royals broadcast, which is the only broadcast. So Ryan LaFever, I think, is who it is. Just tough. Come on. We got it. Like, I kind of understand the assignment there. Like, Jason Benetti and Aaron Goldsmith and the guys who do local and do national, they change the tone. When they do the national games, there's a way to do this. And this was not it. Anyway, Twins, who knows what to make of them? I mean, obviously, their team is very different now. Luke Kuechel, good player. So,
very good player.
That is good. And I look forward to reading Lance's pitcher notes about Mick Abel and Taj Bradley whenever they surface with them. I will be locked on them. I imagine you will have thoughts there. Three more series. The Reds and Pirates split a best of four. Skeens, good pitcher. I don't know if you've written much about him. Pretty good. Do we need Lance to confirm that? Probably not. But I do want to talk now. Again, Pirates win the first two. Reds really bounce back. Sunday was an atrocity of a baseball game, but the Reds do win it. And Hunter Green is coming back for Cincinnati this week, which is important. But I want to zoom in on Chase Burns, who struck out 10 for the fourth time in his last 5 starts. This is a rookie who, is he going to get to enough innings to make a push for NL Rookie of the Year the way that we kind of thought Jacob Mizrowski could? Maybe. I don't know. But what have you seen from Chase Burns? Another one who, if I'm not mistaken, is still mostly surviving on 2 pitches. But his heater is really something, but so is his slider. And he's striking 38% strikeout rate so far as a rookie. So what have you seen from Chase Burns?
Yeah, he's throwing a little bit of a change up to lefties, like around 15% of the time. So he's got a third pitch. It's just, he doesn't really need it. The key thing with me here is, like, this slider's really, really good. And it's also pretty platoon neutral. It's actually somewhat comparable to, like, what Hunter Green's doing, just slightly different shape. But he's running, like, I think I have swinging strike rates at like 26%. That's like well above the average. The zone miss is above the average. Chase rate's at 45%. So he's like getting into leverage counts and using the slider, which is kind of like just a short, I don't know how to describe it. It's not a sweeper. It's not really like a pure bullet pitch. He's got a little like glove side bite to it, which I think is the main issue when it's sitting 89 to 91, is that it takes off a little away from righties and into lefties. And it's really platoon neutral, as I said. So, like, it works. Like, he could just rip it 40% of the time to either handedness, and he doesn't have really any need to adjust. There's very few pitches in baseball that I think are like this platoon neutral, and it's really working for him. I mean, I'm fascinated to see if he's a guy that over time starts to add other stuff, because he doesn't really need other stuff right now. He's going to need to really ball out to get a chance to beat your Drake Baldwin take here. But
I agree.
I don't know. Small but chance. You never know.
But it is funny when you have that Hunter Green parallel right there in that same rotation. We'll have a lot of those same conversations where if he's having this amount of success with these two pitchers, it's like, well, what am I supposed to tell him he's wrong?
Yeah,
it's working out pretty well. I know that ERA is still not that good, but that was just that one.
He's flashed some unbelievable outings.
Yeah, well, and also I believe it was just that one disastrous start where he didn't make it out of the first inning, because otherwise he's been
great point. Yeah,
really, really, really good. Other than that, two more. The Nationals take 2 out of 3 over the Giants. The Giants, I can't believe that. On one hand, it's like they were so far over 500. The fact that they're at 500 is embarrassing. On the other hand, it feels like they should be 5 games under for how bad they played. very disappointing for San Francisco. Nice to see James Wood finally have a big weekend. He's really been struggling over the past month or so. And then Mackenzie Gore, I know one of your favorite pitchers, looked fantastic on Sunday. He strikes out 10 in 6 scoreless innings. I know the Nationals catchers have not been helping him out much this year. They're probably not helping out any of the pitchers, for that matter, in Washington. That's not the only reason they're struggling. But Gore, I know, is someone that those catchers, you feel like, probably could be doing a little bit of a better job.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, it's funny, too. I got to examine this. But the 4 worst teams in catcher framing this year, okay, Nationals. And when you see the Nationals on the top of like a bad list, you go, okay, who else is there? The Angels, the Rockies, you know, like I'm just waiting to see those names. No, the other 3 teams in the bottom 4, the Rays, the Astros, and the Dodgers. So Will Smith's catcher framing has gone to hell.
Will Smith, I believe, is like the worst in the league, or at least close to it.
I did see that. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me.
So I don't know. The framing is a weird... It's a great point. Yeah, I mean, Yainer Diaz has been terrible the whole time, so that's not super shocking. But obviously, yeah, Riley Adams and Keibert Ruiz. I don't know. The framing world is a weird one.
The only thing I know,
even Cal Raleigh's gotten a lot worse this season compared to the last few. The only thing I know for sure is that Patrick Bailey is the GOAT. Other than that, yes. And Kirk. Other than that, I don't believe any of it. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
Fangraphs. Fangraphs framing runs has the like. It has the teams you'd expect down there, the White Sox and the Angels. But also, again, the Astros and the Rays. But the gap is larger. So we definitely know the Nationals are the worst. I think we're trying to figure out how bad the other teams are. And I guess the zone adjustment by the umpires this year is really messing all this data up. But somehow, as you said, Bailey is still the best in the world. So
Yep. But that didn't stop the Giants from losing a series at home.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
All right. And then finally, the A's take 2 out of 3 over the Orioles. These are 2 teams that will probably hit a good amount over the final, stretch of the season. And their pitching is no bueno. But I will say Luis Morales, who is now up with the A's, that is an arm I also look forward to reading your thoughts on. I know he's a little bit fresher to the big leagues, so we don't need your full breakdown now. But he had a bit of a ridiculous outing on Sunday where he walked 5, struck out 4, did not allow a hit. That is kind of what you're going to get with Luis Morales. But as the A's look for pitchers to build around, this is certainly one to monitor moving forward. Lance, this was a treat. Thank you so much for giving me so much of your time on this Monday morning. What do you have coming up on your fantastic YouTube channel, Substack, which I encourage everyone to go check out? What are you working on? And go ahead and plug away.
Yeah, I got a piece coming up on who the best bullpen in Major League Baseball is. So focusing on like the top 5 arms. And,
not the Nats.
There's a small case.
Going to save you the
not
time.
Not the Nats. Not,
it's not the Nats.
The Nats. There's
right,
a small
so there
case for the Yankees. The terrifying part is a small case for the Yankees. Which is like, right. Yeah, right? It's
all
buckle
right.
Up, baby.
If you want to put your name next to that, go for it, my guy. That's fine with me. I mean, listen, hey, at the deadline, we kind of felt the same way, but we'll see. We'll see. But okay. All right.
That's
bullpens,
the main thing I got
good
going. And then Substack, usually like 5 times a week. So subscribe to both.
Lot of words. And I promise you, you know, you're going to look at some of these words that Lance is writing. 10% of it, you're going to be like, nope, can't do it. Not too much.
That's
too,
okay.
Too far.
That's okay. Yeah. That is the nerdiest of the nerd. Like the entry point for my content is probably YouTube. I try to keep that somewhat
reasonable. Will be, you know? YouTube, it's only like 1% where he'll say something and you'll be like, I don't know what he's talking about.
Substack, but you're getting in the weeds, man. Like you're clicking into my video description and following that link. Like you're ready for me to go, like, let me give you
the YouTube, the YouTube is a fantastic entryway. You are doing fantastic work, and I'm glad that you continue to grow your work, and Lance is awesome. So thank you for the time. Go support Lance's work. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing, as always. Jake will be back on Wednesday. Don't you worry, folks. I've got some fun stuff coming up this week. So thank you all for listening. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We'll talk to you all soon. Bye-bye.